The title of the lesson is taken from the scriptures, I Was Afraid. And that expression is used at the beginning of both the Old and New Testaments of the Bible. That expression, I was afraid, is found on the lips of Adam in Genesis, the 3rd chapter. And that expression also is found on the lips of the 1 talent man in Matthew, the 25th chapter. We're going to consider the subject of fear and how fear sometimes keeps people from doing what they should be doing and sometimes prompts them to do some sinful things that, of course, they should not be doing. But first, I want to make some general comments on the subject of fear. Fear is one of the most basic and common emotions that humans experience. I suppose everyone experiences some level of fear or anxiety every day of his or her life, perhaps several times a day. Despite the fact, though, that it is such a common emotion, it is considered to be one of the more unpleasant and undesirable emotions. Fear might be the most painful emotion that we experience. It can even be very disabling. As a matter of fact, in 1 Samuel, the 28th chapter, verse 20, as an example of that, King Saul could not even get up from the ground because he was so smitten with fear. In Hebrews 2, verse 15, the writer makes reference to the fact that some were subject to slavery all of their lives because of fear. Fear is often considered an ignoble emotion, and it is deprecated as cowardice. As a matter of fact, heading the list of those who are specifically mentioned as going into the lake of fire that burns with brimstone in Revelation 21, verse 8, is those who are cowards. Fear can spread from one person to another person like a social contagion. And it can be so demoralizing and discouraging as to keep people from doing what they should do. In Deuteronomy 20, verse 8, and Judges 7, verse 3, references are made to the fact that some who were too fearful to go into battle should not go into battle. Apparently it was because they would discourage their fellow soldiers, and that should not be done as men are preparing to go into battle. As a matter of fact, the Greek word phobia, as I'm sure you're aware, has been broadly applied to extreme, irrational, crippling forms of fear. And those who are afflicted with various forms of phobia have even sometimes had to go and have counseling from psychologists or psychiatrists in order to help them cope with their phobias. Fear as a significant factor in life is recognized in both human experience and the Bible. As a matter of fact, President Franklin D. Roosevelt, in his State of the Union address on January 6, 1941, said that there were 4 great freedoms. As a matter of fact, these 4 great freedoms were committed to paintings by the well-known American illustrator Norman Rockwell. They are freedom of worship, secondly, freedom of speech, thirdly, freedom from want, and then freedom from fear. And I think it was in his first inaugural address, President Roosevelt said, "The only thing we have to fear is fear itself." On the other hand, despite its unpleasantness, fear is not invariably bad. That's a way of saying there can be some good things about fear. There are times when we should be fearful. Fear makes people aware of threats, dangers to their safety, and tells them that they should make efforts to avoid those threats and might even prepare them to face those threats. Fear even causes the body to produce adrenaline and to have other reactions which prepare a person in his physical status for either fight or flight. So fear can be a very important emotion to have, especially when it comes in the form of fear of God. Think about how important fear of God is to our lives. Moral order. Our social interactions with one another, are protected by the fear of God. That is to say, some people will do what is right because they believe in God and believe, as I said a moment ago, they will stand in judgment and give an account for their conduct here upon this earth. And because of that, they're careful about how they treat other people. Joshua said to serve God in sincerity and truth because of fear of God. Paul said in Philippians 2, verse 12, we are to work out our salvation with fear and trembling, because fear of God is critical to obedience. This kind of fear of God, sums up our obligations to God and prompts us to avoid the greatest threat of all to our well-being, and that is, quite frankly and succinctly, fear of going to hell. Let me just read a passage or two along those lines, one that is probably well known to you. Ecclesiastes 12, verse 13 says, the conclusion when all has been heard is, fear God and keep His commandments, because this applies to every person. It's interesting to note in the Scriptures how often those two things, fear God and obedience to Him, are coupled. Also in Matthew, the 10th chapter, verse 28, Jesus there tells us who or what we ought to fear. He says there, and do not fear those who kill the body, but are unable to kill the soul, but rather fear Him. And I'll interject, here he's referring to God. But rather fear Him who is able to destroy both soul and body in hell. So I say all of that to say that while fear is unpleasant, it also can serve some very, very important purposes. Pick up where I left off at the beginning. The expression, I was afraid, which titles this lesson, occurs five times in the Bible, and I mentioned a couple of them. First of all, in Genesis 3, verse 10, where Adam says, I was afraid and hid myself. And then in Matthew 25, verse 25, where the one talent man used his fear, saying, I was afraid, as an excuse for not acting upon what he had been given. This expression indicates that fear then sometimes prompts people not to trust God, not to rely upon Him, or to fail to do what they should do, or in some cases to do what they should not do. Fear plays a role in that. And hence it behooves us to consider some biblical examples of those whose fear drove them to resort to sin or to do things they should not have done. This is applicable to all of us. How many times has fear kept us from doing what we should have done? I don't want to speak the gospel to this person. I don't want to talk to this person about Christ or about the salvation of his soul. I'm afraid of how he might react. See, that's just one example of how fear can cause us to fail to do what we should do, or in other cases, to do what we should not do. But let's look at some biblical examples of some sins that have been caused by fear. I've already mentioned this one, but in Genesis 3, verse 10, we see that Adam says he hid from God out of fear. This is Genesis 3, verse 10, where Adam says, I heard the sound of thee in the garden, and I was afraid because I was naked, so I hid myself. Adam, the first man, was also the first to experience fear, at least according to the record of the Scriptures here. And sin is often the reason for fear. This reminds us of the fact that sinners seek out the darkness. They're ashamed of their sins. They want to hide themselves in the gloom, or at least want to stay out of sight of other people, at least while they're in their sins. They fear being exposed. In 1 Thessalonians 5, verses 4 through 7, Paul talks about how sinners seek out the darkness, and they live in the darkness. Why? Because that's where sin is committed. That's where sinners' haunts are. Because they're ashamed of their sins. Or they don't want their sins for one reason or another, whether because they involve illegality or crime, or because it would involve them in some sort of social stigma. they don't want their sins to be exposed, so they hide themselves. Now, how does this apply to us today? Well, of course, people cannot literally hide from God today. He's omniscient. He's omnipresent. He knows and sees all. So we cannot literally hide from Him. But nevertheless, we do that in effect. How? By hiding from God's people. Sometimes when Christians might sin, they might hide themselves from other Christians. They don't want other Christians to know that they have been involved in sin. Or people might deceive themselves into thinking that God does not exist and that they don't have the obligations to God that they actually do have. So they, in effect, hide from God. I'm reminded of Jonah, who in Jonah chapter 1, verses 1 through 3, when he was commanded by God to go and preach in Nineveh, the capital of his enemies, refused to do that and instead tried to run away from his duty. Paul in Romans 1 verse 28 says that some refuse to have God in their knowledge. Yes, they in effect hide from God or their responsibilities to Him. Let me proceed through these relatively quickly. The second example I have is that of pride. Pride as found in the people of Babel. In Genesis the 11th chapter, we read about them. It doesn't say specifically that they were fearful, but the words that the scriptures do put in their mouths, I think we could say fairly, does represent them as being fearful of something, particularly fearful of being scattered. They say, according to the scriptures in Genesis 11, verse 4, "Come, let us build for ourselves a city and a tower whose top will reach into heaven, and let us make for ourselves a name." There you have the pride. "Lest we be scattered abroad over the face of the whole earth." There you have fear. We're afraid of being scattered. Therefore, let's concentrate ourselves in this one city and build this tower that we might make a name for ourselves. Well, God had commanded people to fill the earth. Most recently, to them anyway, in Genesis 9, verse 1, where after the flood, people are told to fill the earth. They nevertheless feared doing that. They feared being spread out and scattered. They feared losing their association with one another and whatever that association would bring to them. So they ignored God's command by concentrating themselves in the city of Babel and building this tower. And thus they disobeyed God. And God scattered them by confusing their languages. Fear robs a person of the humility to submit to God and do what He says, despite their fear. And fear drives some people to lie. An example of that is in the case of Isaac, the husband of Rebekah. In Genesis, the 26th chapter, beginning with verse 7, we read that it says, "When the men of the place asked about his wife, he said, 'She is my sister,' for he was afraid to say, 'My wife,' thinking the men of the place might kill him on account of Rebekah, because she was beautiful." Though God had told Isaac, had reassured him that he would protect him, and had given great promises to him, nevertheless, Isaac feared for his safety because of his beautiful wife, and resorted to lying about his relationship with her in order to protect himself. Well, what were the problems here? Well, first of all, he not only assumed that the worst would happen, that people would kill him. You didn't know that. But people would kill him, he thought, in order to take his wife. But it seems that like Abraham, who had done the same thing earlier in Genesis 12 and Genesis 20, he did not care that he might endanger his wife. As a matter of fact, earlier when Abraham had told a similar lie for the same reason, actually the same lie for the same reason, Pharaoh did take Sarah into his household, going to make her his wife. So these men apparently were prepared to endanger others for their safety. And they did endanger not just their wives, but those who took their wives. So this was very selfish on their part. But fear can cause people to resort to lying. A fourth example now, that of the faithlessness of the Israelites. Of course, when we think about the Israelites, if you know much about them in the Old Testament, the Israelites were often fearful. And as a result of their fears, they failed to rely in faith on God, preferring bondage in Egypt. They would become fearful for one reason or another as they were being led out of Egypt toward Canaan. And they would say things like, well, why didn't you leave us alone there in Egypt so we could continue in bondage to the Egyptians? They preferred that to the threats that they thought they faced and that they feared. So when they faced threats from the Egyptians at the Red Sea or threats from the Canaanites as they were about to leave Kadesh and go up and take the land, or when they were supposed to do that, they became fearful instead because of these threats, and they lost their faith in God. Fear is the opposite of faith. A true faith, trust in God, trust in His promises. Does this apply to us today? Oh, we're not facing the Egyptians or the Canaanites like the Israelites did. I understand that. But don't we become fearful of, oh, where are we going to get the money to do this? To clothe ourselves the way we want to be clothed, or to buy the house we want to buy, or the car we want to buy, or to get this or that. And we become fearful, perhaps, and instead of relying upon God and His promises, at the very least, we become fearful. And in some cases, people might even resort to crime in order to get what they feel that they should have or that they think they need instead of relying and trust upon God. I've known of at least a couple of cases where Christians have been guilty of embezzlement and they've gone to jail because of it. I'm sorry to have to say that. That has been the case. I have even known of some cases in which there have been treasurers in different churches who have stolen from the church's treasuries for one reason or another. Those are extreme examples, but we all have fears in our lives about being able to afford this or that, don't we? What do the scriptures say? Jesus talked quite a bit about anxiety, which is a form of fear, beginning with Matthew 6, verse 25. But I'll confine myself to His promise and His command in verse 33. Where He says, but seek first His kingdom and His righteousness, and all these things, that is, these material things, shall be added to you. Peter tells us in 1 Peter 5, verse 7, that we should cast our cares, our anxieties upon the Lord, that is, take them to Him in prayer, because He cares for us. But moving on, fear sometimes leads to the sin of presumption. We start assuming or presuming things that we should not do. There are a couple of instances of this in the case of King Saul. 1 Samuel the 13th chapter, when he saw how the Philistines were gathering against him and his own army was scattering from him, he became fearful. And instead of waiting for Samuel to arrive and offer sacrifices as he had been told, he took it upon himself, contrary to Samuel, the prophet's command, to offer sacrifices before his arrival. 1 Samuel, the 15th chapter, verse 24. When he is confronted by the same prophet Samuel for having acted contrary to God's command, he says, I fear the people. So, Saul allowed his fear of his people, what they would do, to overcome him and cause him to act contrary to God's commandments and do what he thought was best. Well, Saul is a good example of how presumption allows a person to make the mistake of thinking that partial obedience is acceptable to God. Fear should not be allowed to provoke us into thinking that we can take matters into our own hands and that we can fix things that God has failed to fix. And sometimes fear allows us to substitute our own ways for God's ways. A good example of this is King Jeroboam. Again, the term fear is not specifically applied to him, but in 1 Kings, the 12th chapter, we see that obviously he does become fearful that if the subjects in his rebellious northern kingdom continued going down to Jerusalem to worship, they would become reattached in their allegiance to his rival, King Rehoboam of Judah. As a matter of fact, he is so fearful that he decides to put golden calves, idols, in the northern extremity of his kingdom at Dan and in the southern extremity of his kingdom at Bethel, because he feared his people would return their allegiance to his rival. So what did he do? He created this new false religion as a substitute for his people in order to secure his kingdom. Or at least that's what he thought he was doing. The irony is that the sin which Jeroboam committed to secure his kingdom instead was its undoing. Another example. In this case, we find that fear sometimes leads us to be silent, to refuse to speak up when we ought to speak up, to live our lives in some sort of unseemly secrecy. This was true of those who feared the Jewish rulers, as you can see from this list of passages, all from the Gospel of John. It was not unusual for people to refuse to speak up in support of Jesus or to express their faith in Jesus because of their fear of the Jews. Now, what would they have gotten for doing this? Would they, for instance, have been taken out and stoned? Well, certainly not at this point. Basically, all they would have gotten for this would have been social disapproval. Let's just look at one example. In the 9th chapter of John, there is the record of Jesus' healing of a blind man. His parents were called in for questioning. It says in John 9, verses 22 and 23, his parents said this because they were afraid of the Jews. For the Jews had already agreed that if anyone should confess him to be Christ, he would be put out of the synagogue. For this reason, his parents said, he is of age. Ask him. That is, their son, who had been healed of his blindness by Jesus. They were afraid of being put out of the synagogue. Well, I'm afraid that people underestimate how controlling the desire for the approval, or at least avoiding the disapproval of others, can be. That is because our own concept of ourselves is based upon what we think others think of us. When others think poorly of us, it's hard for us to think well of ourselves. When others think we're great, it's hard for us not to think we're great. As a matter of fact, we want to think that. So we often live our lives in such a way as to gain the approval of others, or at least avoid their disapproval. Yes, the desire for the approval of others can be very, very strong. The threat of the social disapproval of the Jewish rulers to put these people out of the synagogue, in some cases moved even the colleagues of these rulers to keep quiet about Jesus. Certainly it moved this blind man's parents. You'd think they would be so happy that their son was healed of his blindness, but instead they were so fearful of the Jewish rulers that they were driven to silence. Ask him. Don't talk to us. We don't know anything about this. Leave us out of it. And sometimes fear leads to passivity or inactivity. We've earlier read from Matthew, the 25th chapter, when the master who had given the one talent man his one talent approached him, expecting him to have done something with his one talent. Oh, he said, instead, I was afraid, and I went away and hid your talent. Here you have what is yours. You haven't gained anything, but the good news is you haven't lost anything either. Some, like this one talent servant, are so much fearful of losing what they have that they will not even accept a reasonable risk of losing it to gain something much better. If you think about it, that's the way life works. We all take reasonable risks in order to gain something better. Why? Just driving here today. As a matter of fact, any time you get out on the roads and drive, whether it's your job to make the money that you need for your livelihood and that of your family, you get out and drive. And you need to do that. Otherwise, it's going to get worse because if you don't have money to buy the food or whatever it is you need to live, you're going to die. And someone said, well, but listen, if I get out on the road, accidents sometimes occur. Sometimes people get killed in accidents. Yes, that's true. But you take the lesser risk in order to gain something greater. All of us live our lives by way of taking reasonable, calculated risks in order to get what we need. Well, why don't we do that in our service to God? Of course, a lot of people do. But yes, there are some who will not fulfill their duties as Christians for fear of jeopardizing what they have. There are other examples that I could use of this. Some people will move to areas where there are no known Christians or in churches with which they might worship. Well, that's where my job is taking me. Well, maybe you need to consider getting another job. Oh, I know it might reduce your standard of living. But what's more important, your soul or your physical status in this life? Oh, but I'm fearful of what might happen to me if I give up this job. Listen, place your fears and your anxieties in the hands of God and just do what is right and depend upon Him. As we move along toward the end then, another example of what fear can do is that it can create hypocrisy in us. Peter is a good example of this. Peter had a problem with fear. Despite all of his bravado and his boasting about what he would do, when it came down to the point where he had overcome his fears, he failed to do so. There's the example of him walking on the water to Jesus, but then when he saw the wind and the waves, he began to lose his faith and he began to sink in the water. Of course, there's the famous example of when he was confronted by others who said he was with Jesus while Jesus was on trial. And he said, I don't know the man. He denied Christ three times out of fear of being associated with him and suffering repercussions from that association. But the example that I particularly want to look at is in Galatians, the second chapter, verses 11 through 13. And this is after the day of Pentecost, when he had come into his full powers as an authority and influence as an apostle. In Galatians 2, beginning with verse 11, we read that it says, but when Cephas, that's another name for Peter, came to Antioch, I opposed him to his face because he stood condemned. For prior to the coming of certain men from James, he used to eat with the Gentiles. But when they came, he began to withdraw himself and hold himself aloof, fearing the party of the circumcision. And the rest of the Jews joined him in hypocrisy, with the result that even Barnabas was carried away by their hypocrisy. As a matter of fact, this is a great irony, Peter was the one who was chosen by God to bring the gospel to the Gentiles, first of all, in the case of Cornelius, as recorded in Acts, the 10th chapter. But despite all of that, Peter's fear of Jews from James in Jerusalem made him refuse to eat with his Gentile brethren. And this is where the hypocrisy comes in. Though he had been eating with them, felt free to do so, thought it was right for him to do so. But then he wanted to hide that when those from James arrived in Antioch. So he acted hypocritically and withdrew from his Gentile brethren, refused to eat with them as he had been doing previously. One last example is that of procrastination, that on the part of the Roman governor Felix. Paul was teaching him on one occasion and was having an effect upon Felix. So that it says in Acts 24, verse 25, and as he was discussing righteousness, self-control, and the judgment to come, Felix became frightened and said, go away for the present, and when I find time, I will summon you. And later on, he did talk to Paul, as a matter of fact. But in the interim, when they were apart, Felix was apparently able to harden his heart against the gospel, bring his control back to himself. The gospel so frightened the Roman governor Felix that he deferred, put off, listening to Paul for a while. He procrastinated then. Procrastination, in that respect especially, is a dangerous thing. Procrastination causes us to come to a state of insensitivity, such insensitivity that should those opportunities appear again before us, we will not even take advantage of them. And they might not even return. They didn't in the case of Felix. But by then, he had become too hardened to be affected as he had initially been affected by Paul's preaching of the gospel. So in conclusion, we observe that though fear has often been cited as an excuse for sin, I was afraid, people say, as if that makes all the difference in the world. God has never accepted fear as an excuse for sin or disobedience. Fear leads, as we've seen, to many terrible sins. Rather than yielding in fear to these sins, we must rely and trust on God and pray for God's help rather than being fearful. Every person needs to do the best he can and leave the rest to God. I'm not saying that our faith should lead us into passivity. We've already talked about that. We need to work. We need to do all that we can. But there are limits to what we can do. And when we've done what we can do, we need to leave the rest to God in faith rather than in fear. It might be that there's at least one person here today who wishes to render obedience to the gospel of Jesus Christ. Maybe some sort of fear of leaving the world, for instance, has kept you thus far from obeying the gospel. Please don't let it keep you any more from obeying the gospel. That's the thing to be afraid of, as Jesus said in Matthew 10, verse 28. Going before God in judgment unprepared. That's the thing to be fearful of. But if you're willing to overcome that fear now, instead of allowing it to control you, come forward then in faith and in repentance to confess before us the wonderful fact that Jesus of Nazareth is indeed the Son of God, and then be baptized or immersed in a body of water for the forgiveness of your sins. We've prepared that right behind me. This can be done in a few minutes, and then you can leave this place with the hope of heaven in your heart. If you follow those instructions of the Scriptures and becoming a child of God, but since then have fallen away and wish to be renewed in your relationship with God and His people by a confession of your sins here before us today, we bid you to come forward and make your needs known, as together for your encouragement, we now stand and sing.